Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The nation approaches 100,000 coronavirus-related deaths. Well over 300,000 people have died worldwide. Instances like the COVID-19 pandemic have made many of us aware of our mortality. Conversations were probably taking place at dinner tables across the U.S. while quarantining at home. What happens to the house or the car if I die? What happens to the unpaid bills? Who's going to take care of my children? Who's going to take care of my parents? These are conversations that must take place under normal circumstances, not just extraordinary ones like a pandemic. It's one thing to talk about end-of-life planning. It's another to act on it. Stephanie Townsend Ayala is an elder law attorney with the El Paso Law Offices of Townsend Ayala Coulter and Clute. She's also on the board of directors of the Texas chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. Townsend Ayala says her office saw an increase in activity when COVID-19 was making its way through the El Paso community around mid-March.
We sent the office home. We've been working from home, and immediately we saw an uptick in people. You know, we always have cases where people hire us, we do their estate planning, and then they just don't come in and sign. They can never get that last step done. So we had several of those folks who suddenly had time on their hands and wanted to get these documents signed. But we were in a special predicament there because we need to have witnesses and notaries in order to sign many of the estate planning documents or real estate documents like deeds that needed to get accomplished. So we were in a bit of a quandary until the governor went ahead and issued an edict saying that notaries can sign via video conference now. So we are able to take care of those signing ceremonies now. But we did have an uptick of people who wanted to get their estate planning done. We're still seeing that. There was a drop in business for a bit, but now it started to tick back up. We've scheduled drive-by signings at the office where people can just stay in their car and drive up and get their documents signed, and that seems to be something the clients appreciate. You know, I've asked clients if they are going to want to have these long-distance phone conferences now. You know, I've got phone conferences with clients when typically I would be seeing them face-to-face. And the clients are telling me that they prefer face-to-face, that they would rather come in, go to the trouble, get to my office, and to be able to speak with me one-on-one or just to be able to share very, very personal information with someone and be with them in person. There's a difference. It makes a difference for people.
It's a big step already that they've taken in contacting your office, but I think the initial step is just taking that initial conversation with their families. And I know among Hispanic families in particular, even though we may celebrate the dead and Dia de los Muertos, for example, it's not something that is talked about within families. And I know even among my own family, you hear, well, when I die, my children will take care of it. They'll know what to do. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure in your experience, that's not what happens.
Well, people who say that are really just putting money in the pockets of attorneys, because the bigger the mess that you leave, then the more work for the attorneys. And what we can do is while you're alive, you can take some measures to ensure that there's not a fight or there's not a probate. And so there's things you can do proactively if you will just address it. And you're right, people don't want to face the reality of death and dying, but I'm having conferences every day with people whose loved ones are on hospice. I have one woman who's on, her mom's on hospice. She's dying of COVID right now, and she wants to know what her rights are because she's awaiting the results of a test. So there's a lot of people in very, very difficult predicaments. and they're trying to find some peace right now. And then we have other clients whose loved ones are in nursing homes that have COVID problems, and they cannot go visit their loved one. They can't get them out, really. It's really difficult to transfer a client, even if they're testing negative for COVID, out of a facility that has several staff and residents who are testing positive.
It's a really difficult situation that so many people are in. Again, family members are facing end-of-life decisions, or they themselves are ill. And I'm sure COVID-19 has thrown just a huge wrench in many of these people's plans. What are some of those examples of problems that COVID-19 is causing specifically for some of your clients?
Well, the one where I do have clients who've gone to the nursing home and just, against all the orders, gone in and gotten their loved one and taken them home. I've seen that happen. And that creates its own set of problems, because under the law, if the nursing home has not already pre-screened that home and made sure that it's a safe discharge of a person who needs skilled care, then the nursing home has no option but to report that removal to Adult Protective Services. So now the child who just is trying to protect their loved one and take them out of the nursing home and take them home because they really, really believe that they're in danger of a premature death, then they start being investigated for abuse, neglect, or exploitation of an elderly person for not ensuring that there was proper care at home before they left. That's another unique problem.
Well, we were supposed to have on this program with us today one of your clients. She's a Hispanic registered nurse, and we found out just today that her mother is ill. She's facing end-stage cancer at this time, and our sympathies go to her because not only is she dealing with her mother's end of life, but she was also making plans for herself and her family. So what kind of complications might that bring up for clients? Can you share some of those examples?
This is what thoughtful, forward-thinking families are doing, and I want to refer to that one family in particular. They have a loving set of children who just are protecting mom and dad and making sure they're okay. So they came in without ever leaving their home. I think just for the signing, the family is able to get their estate planning done. And in addition to that, because of this illness, they've gone ahead and tried to make plans to qualify the mom and dad for Medicaid because they may need a nursing home before they pass. And that's a high likelihood with some of these types of illnesses, including COVID. And so they want to make sure mom and dad can qualify for nursing home Medicaid. And in doing so, they've gone ahead and put a beneficiary designation on mom and dad's home. And they do that with a future interest transfer deed, technically known as an enhanced life estate, or colloquially known as ladybird deeds, and there's a transfer on death deed. And so they're having them sign these deeds so that upon their death, instead of having to go to probate and having to hire a lawyer and having to fight the Medicaid estate recovery program, the house automatically transfers to their children upon their passing. And that's really one of the things that I've seen a big uptick in the demand for in my practice is estate planning, wills, powers of attorneys, and transfer deeds on death. People are preparing for that. And, you know, it's hard to think about your mom or dad passing. A lot of people have difficulty even dealing with that. But when you think about your life as a business, and every good business has an exit strategy, what is yours? The one you mentioned, Norma, where people say, my kids will take care of it. That strategy is to put your head in the sand. The head in the sand strategy doesn't usually work really well, except for probate lawyers. You know, when you do these ladybird deed or transfer on death deeds, you've denied a probate lawyer the right to get wealthy off of your family's misery if they fight. And so what you're doing is you're really being forward thinking, you're being thoughtful and pragmatic. And those are the people we're seeing right now, is people who have thought this through. They accept their mortality, they accept that hey, I've you know, been able to experience life. And we all have to accept our own mortality. Life is so short and fleeting and yet so powerful. And so what we have to do is prepare for the inevitable and for the worst that could happen, and then hope for the best and try to stay safe and sane about it.
Stephanie Townsend Ayala is an elder law attorney with the El Paso Law Offices of Townsend Ayala, Coulter, and Clute. She's also on the board of directors of the Texas chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. Still to come, some people who already have documents signed and ready to go in case of an emergency might be thrown by the unusual circumstances of COVID-19, like whether you'll need to go on a ventilator.
So if you have a living will and you say you don't want to be kept on a ventilator and you have COVID and you need a ventilator, you're going to get a ventilator.
More with Stephanie Townsend Ayala is next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Living will, power of attorney, do not resuscitate. These are important documents that can determine how your wishes are honored when you're alive and after you're gone. Death isn't the easiest conversation starter, but more of us are talking about it in the wake of COVID-19. It's cut a deadly path across the globe, and it's taking an exceptional toll on Black and Latino communities in the U.S. A lot of patients with the coronavirus are on ventilators. Perhaps at one point you've told your loved ones, if I'm ever on a ventilator, pull the plug. I don't want to live that way, or I don't want to burden you with that decision. Maybe you've even signed a document that expresses that desire. But we've all heard stories of people with COVID-19 coming off ventilators after days or weeks. Elder law attorney Stephanie Townsend Ayala is our guest today. She explains how a living will comes into play under these circumstances.
That's a good question. A lot of people misunderstand really what a living will is and what that means, and they don't understand what a DNR is, a do not resuscitate, and what that means. So I really appreciate the chance to kind of talk about that. So I did have someone call me and say, my brother filled out a living will. It says he does not want to be kept alive on a ventilator or feeding tube, and he has pneumonia and he's on a ventilator right now. What should I do? Should I take him off of it? And my response is a very quick, do not take him off the ventilator. Just because you have a living will doesn't mean you won't get a ventilator or a feeding tube if you need those. Now, the living will only refers to when you are deemed by a board of doctors in a hospital or another facility to be irrevocably in a vegetative state. And by the way, they go through a whole protocol and get a lot of doctors involved. And if they decide that you are in a vegetative state, then and only then would your decisions based on your living will come into play. So if you have a living will and you say you don't want to be kept on a ventilator and you have COVID and you need a ventilator, you're going to get a ventilator. You have not been declared to be in a vegetative state. The one thing that I want to encourage clients not to sign is, and I always tell my clients, don't sign a DNR. Every medical facility wants your family to sign it for you, or you to sign it. All that is, what is a DNR? It just says, if I have a heart or a breathing incident, do not call 911. Don't give me full code. I'm a no code instead of a full code. A full code being give it all you got and try to keep them alive. So the reason I tell people not to sign a DNR is, first of all, it's not really appropriate for the vast majority of patients. And if you have a properly signed power of attorney, a medical power of attorney, then you have somebody who can make that choice. Why in the world would you empower a medical facility to make such a personal choice? So while a DNR may make it easier for the facility, I recommend that clients do not sign them if you've got family members who can make that choice for you.
Well, people are listening right now who may be considering, because of COVID-19, how to start planning. So what are some of the initial first steps that people need to take? For example, if a person becomes incapacitated or cannot travel to the bank, for example, to deposit their check or to take money out? What are the best ways for these people, first and foremost, to care for themselves and to plan ahead?
Well, everybody needs to have a will and a power of attorney for finances, as well as a power of attorney for medical choices. Those three things are the most important things that any human can have over the age of 18 in terms of putting your wishes in black and white and making sure that there's fewer lawyers involved, nothing to fight over, and things go smoothly. Now, I give a package of estate planning documents, includes seven of them, and five are while you're alive and sick, and then two for when you're gone, being a last will and testament and control of the remains, which just says who gets to be in charge of the funeral. So then once you've gotten those basics done, it's an emergency 911. If you don't have those, you should consider it an emergency 911 in your life, because if you don't, and then you become mentally or physically incapacitated where you can't do any of those things, then the family has to go get a guardianship on you, and you're talking thousands of dollars, lawyers involved, court investigators, a judge, a mother may I process of spending money. And so it's extremely expensive, painful, and onerous to have to go to get a guardianship in court. But that's what we have to do as a last resort when people fail to plan ahead. And then you want to look at a deed, like a beneficiary designation on everything you own, your house, your car, your bank accounts, your life insurance. Make sure you've got a beneficiary and an alternate beneficiary on everything you have. You can have even a tertiary level of beneficiaries if you so choose, just to make sure that it doesn't have to go through probate. That means your estate will be non-probate, and that means it'll pass outside of the probate process. That's really important if you're looking at needing Medicaid for your nursing home or home health care, because the state of Texas says that they might try to come grab your assets after you die, but they'll only try to grab assets that go through the probate process. If you can make sure your assets follow outside the probate process, then you won't be subjected to the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program. So what is probate? Probate is just the formal legal procedure by which you remove the name of a deceased person from a title or a deed. If you've put beneficiary designations on everything, then you don't need to probate. So that's the key.
Well, you brought up an interesting point about, I believe it's the last will and testament you were talking about, people who can take control of a family member's remains. Has that become an issue in the wake of COVID-19? Because we're hearing, for example, in Mexico, they are cremating remains of individuals who have passed of any type of respiratory or pneumonia symptoms out of fear of COVID-19. Has that happened in your experience, or is that anything that you can maybe talk about?
We have not had that issue come up. In Texas, the law says that a blood relative can make decisions, and so far that is being honored. But, however, the law also says that if two blood relatives are fighting over how the funeral should happen or when or in what manner, then the funeral director has no choice but to put your body on ice and then wait for a court order saying what to do. So this is, again, why you want to have these documents in place so that there's no fight. There's nothing to fight over. It's just written in black and white, and whatever you say goes. You know, this is the only time when you're making your estate plan and doing a deed, it's the only time that you get to be a lawmaker. You get to make the law that applies to your health and your safety and everything you own. And it's the hardest law to break.
I'm not sure if you can answer this particular question, but, you know, there's a high number of undocumented Texans who may be wanting to make end-of-life plans. Are there any specific rules or regulations that they have to follow in order to make these plans because they are undocumented?
No, the law does not distinguish between those who are undocumented or those who are documented in terms of being able to follow your wishes. If you have a last will and testament, it's going to be followed. If you have a power of attorney, it's going to be followed, and nobody's going to ask about your documentation. However, it is important to keep in mind that if you're leaving funds, if you're leaving money to a person who is not a U.S. citizen, and you're just leaving it outright to them, then they're going to pay higher taxes. They're going to have a taxable rate of any gift over $60,000. If you are giving gifts to people who are not U.S. citizens, you may want to consider putting a trust together.
Does that also apply if, for example, if a person is living in the U.S. and they want to leave something to somebody living in Mexico? Does that same rule apply?
Correct. They don't look at where they're living. They look at their citizenship in terms of the taxable nature of the estate.
Stephanie Townsend Ayala is an elder law attorney with the El Paso Law Offices of Townsend Ayala, Coulter and Clute. She's also on the board of directors of the Texas chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. For more information on the topics discussed on today's show, like Lady Bird deeds or the 7 estate planning documents everyone should have filed away, visit tpr.org or schedule a visit with an elder law attorney. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. And our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Ben Henry is our podcast producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.